As an employee-owned financial firm, Baird offers advice solely focused on clients' needs, while consistently investing in their expertise and capabilities to serve those in need. More information at baird-difference.com.
Every Tuesday, we hop on the 7 line, cruise on down to Morton Street, turn north, oh, there's the Showers Plaza, into the front doors we go, knock on the mayor's door, and there's John Hamilton, the mayor of the city of Bloomington. Good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
Good afternoon, Mike. I'm doing well. Enjoying the beautiful 1st of November day.
Did you run out of candy last night?
I was worried. I was worried, but I did not. Did you?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes, I guess the 77 pounds we had was not enough.
Well, I had to shift from take two to take one, and I was calibrating, but we turned out okay. Yeah.
We had a very busy night. I think the weather was a great part of that because it didn't get cold. And when it's not cold, then little kids stay out later and moms and dads don't mind. And
I want to make one point.
Please.
Which, of course, is totally random. But you remember how we talked about we're traditional on the Halloween. We stick with the 31st, right?
Yes. And, again, that's just not good.
Tradition goes back to the Middle Ages or something. I don't
right.
know. But anyway, but I do want to note that if we had switched it to Sunday night, while you probably would have had candy left over, everyone would have been damp and kind of grumpy. So, you know,
that's a good point.
You just never know.
Luck of the draw. Or I could point out though, Saturday night was absolutely perfect, and we could have been out of candy by dusk on Saturday.
Fair enough.
But that's the fun part. It was great because everybody can get out and enjoy it, and we're not. Rain's hard because you can't see, and it's gross, and makeup and all this stuff runs
around.
Now,
let me ask you, did you, there are people who came to my door, and I didn't know who they were, like their costumes. Some of them, like a cat, but then there are like some folks, I don't know all of them. How did you do?
I asked a lot of questions, let's put it that way. Oh, what are you supposed to be, young man? It's like, hey, you old dope, get out of my way, give me some candy. But no, my 12-year-old helped me out. She had her friends over for a little bit. So, anything I got lost in translation, I'd be like, hey, what's that? And she's like, oh, it's from this book or it's
translated
from this
movie. Into 21st century stars or something.
Yeah, exactly. But not a lot of classic costumes, I think, is your point. And I think your point is accurate. Now, you get some people like my son hates wearing masks. So he goes as a zombie baseball player, you know, something like that, which I can handle.
Yeah.
But some of the cartoons, but some of the characters either from books or from these, from shows on Hulu or whatever else. Yeah.
Right.
So it was fun because when it's nice out, you get more people out and then you get to see all of everything. Now, let's go back to yesterday quickly because in the afternoon, early evening, people were smelling gasoline. What happened there? I saw on the internet that people were talking about the West Side. Something happened. Was there a spill? What's going on? Did we ever get that all figured out?
We did. It took a while. Actually, on Sunday, we started noticing in the treatment plant, the wastewater plant down on the South Side, started identifying hydrocarbons, gasoline basically coming into the plant, concerned about that in the system. We started seeing, so that's a big alarm, like where is that coming from? And as you might guess, it's pretty complicated to try to figure it out. They were all over the city trying to identify it. After a number of explorations, it zeroed in on the Marathon Station at 3rd and Patterson on the West Side. And it turned out they had a major gasoline release, and I was actually out there late last night, and we had people there overnight as they're cleaning up what was. We still don't know exactly how much, and it was a bad thing. It's really not supposed to happen, and that entity is going to have to be dealing with the state and us and regulators about how did you let what seemed to be thousands of gallons of gasoline get off site, and you could smell it. Once it gets off site, it can get into the vapors can get into the storm sewer system through inlets and all that stuff. And it was really an intense work from our first responders. I want to thank them. And Department of Environmental Management had a person come down overnight working on that. If you go by, you'll see it's closed today, the gas station, and they're still pumping things out and working on it. They're going to have to remediate. So everybody was kept safe. There was we did real quick checks and constant checks on explosive dangers, because that's really the scary thing with the vapor. And the plant is monitoring all that to make sure our wastewater plant operates. Just as a tip, as a hint, what happens is when that happens, we have this giant basin, equalization basin up the hill, and they pump all of the sewage effluent up to that. So nothing goes through the plant for a while to make sure we can find out what's in it and is it safe, and that'll be drained off over the days to come.
Just a couple follow-ups here. Number one, how do you end up tracing it back to 1307 West 3rd Street? How does that process work?
Yeah.
I know you're not a an epidemiologist. I don't even know who you'd call for this, but that's just terribly interesting to figure out how we found it.
Yeah, it's a spill response, and I'm not a technical spill responder, but they check. They can use vapor testers all over the place, portable vapor testers that can look what's the concentration of vapor at this part of town and that part. But one of the scary things is once they get in those pipes, they can, you know, the stormwater pipes are not full, nor are the sewer pipes. Unlike a water pipe under pressure, there's a lot of air in those. So once if vapor gets in there, it can spread all over the place.
That's what I'm saying. Then you don't know where it's coming from.
Right. So that took a while to find out. Now then they can. There was actual, like I was down there late last night, and you could smell gasoline just walking around. So there was some spill that way. But it took. They found, you know, following the concentrations, then they identified that there actually had been a spill, and I believe the gas station said, wait a minute, we're supposed to have thousands more gallons in this tank than we do. Where did it go? So they kind of noticed that too, a little too late.
Well, that's just, wow. This isn't something I don't know if we've dealt with before. How do you train for this? How do your first responders get, boy, what a night they had. Holy cow.
They did. It was really two nights because it started Sunday with the plant, and then we've really found it Monday at the gas station. So they were working at the plant and looking for locations all night, Sunday night, and then we found it Monday. This is kind of the good thing about government and bureaucracies. They got experts. We have experts. The state has experts who know how to deal with this, and then there are private contractors brought in by the property owner that deal with these kind of spills. And underground storage tanks, of which there are thousands in the state and tens, hundreds of thousands across the country, are not unknown to have this happen. Interestingly, I won't even go into the ethanol and fiberglass tanks and what can happen, but there's all kinds of technical issues. But we had a guy, you know, I used to run the Department of Environmental Management.
Correct.
Dave, the guy who came down here, we worked together 20 plus years ago. He's still there doing emergency response. So that was good to run into him at 11 o'clock last night.
Good and bad. Right, exactly.
Yeah,
you'd
enough.
Rather do it
fair
over over dinner, but if we're going to do it this way. Again, I know you're not an expert in this field, but I can hear people yelling through their radio at me. How do you clean it up? What do we do now? What do we do now? Does gasoline evaporate? Do you have to, do you rinse it out? This is so fascinating in a bad way, but in an interesting way.
Yeah, so the short answer is I probably can't give all the technical answers to that. I do know, and what they talked about last night was, the first thing you want to do is pump out all of the leaking that you can that's kind of uphill, because that flow continues to put pressure to move it through the system. You test a lot to see where the hydrocarbons may be. So a lot of it is pumping it out, testing and looking for it. You got to watch. Gasoline in the wastewater plant could kill all our bugs, which we don't want. So. From what I've heard today is the signals are pretty good, that the levels have come quickly down and that it hasn't. We don't have serious infestation, if you will, into the system. You know, as some others explained to me, you know, anytime you have a rain, you're going to wash oil and gas from
streets,
road surfaces and all that stuff. So you get those kind of sheens in streams. It's one of the reasons we try to clean the streets and all that stuff. But we'll be continuing to report on it over the days to come. I think there's a hotline if people want to call that. But Department of Environmental Management will be front and center on this. you know, the federal and state environmental protection agencies want to make sure, and we work with them to protect our streams and our waterways, and it does evaporate a lot, just like spilled gasoline will, but this is, there may be soil remediation. I think you'll see trenching and boring going on at the Marathon site, because they've got to figure out what's left on that site.
Well, the good news, it's found. Do you anticipate, as the days of November begin here, that you'll still be receiving calls from people saying that you smell that, or is that?
I doubt it.
Okay, it's worked its way through the system.
I doubt it. I don't know for sure, but you know, the decisions that had to be made during all this were: what do you do with the plant diverting all the water?
Right.
Two, do you have to notify emergency notification of risk of fire, explosion, others, and that we determined did not need to happen. That was a decision through the night with the emergency responders. The chief of the fire chief was the person in control of the site last night to make sure we're protecting against you know, those kind of outcomes, and they did a great job. Jason Moore is a terrific leader, and his team and the state folks, and they'll continue to monitor, and then the cleanup again will be a multi-days. It could take months to clean up that site. I just don't know.
Who is in charge from this point out? Is it the state, the Indiana Department Environmental Management? Is it the city? Do you work in concert? Or who is now left with jurisdiction?
Yeah, well, we had the jurisdiction to make sure immediate risk, you know, of explosion or fire or whatever. But that has, I believe, basically mitigated. We have responsibility for our wastewater plant to make sure that we protect that and protect the waterways. We do that in concert with the state, and they regulate us and oversee us. And then in terms of that cleanup, that really will fall, I think, to the state and the federal agencies to make sure that property gets cleaned up. There's a statewide insurance fund for gas stations they all pay into to deal with this stuff, and it'll be complicated, I'm sure, but the state has the basic parameters to make sure it's cleaned up to the right standards.
So we could put a bow on this by saying there's no longer anything leaking into this. Whatever is leaked in there is being addressed and taken care of, and now it's just the remediation around the site, working your way back, or I guess from the station downstream, for lack of a better word. So that's the next step in this, is getting all that cleaned up.
Good summary. Yes, it is.
Okay, good. Well, we're on the same page, and that's good. I know this was bothering some people yesterday because there weren't any answers, but sometimes we just don't have them as quickly as the internet operates. So I wanted
to... Yeah, we put out a press release at 1 a.m.
I was going to say 12:58. Yeah, I just looked at it. Yeah. I knew that it was later. I was up late last night. I was telling the listeners because I was working because of the Halloween and stuff, and I saw, wow, 12:58. Okay, geez. So you know that's a deal when it's at that time, because... you can just start connecting the dots from that concern. So there you go, folks. And it was a gasoline leak identified as a hydrocarbon odor source. You can read all about it, bloomington.in.gov/news. And that's exactly where I get all of my news that's not delivered to my inbox. You can sign up for newsletters and all that other fun stuff as well. That's how I get all the good stuff. That's how I know all the thing that's going on. And last Friday, you, the Hopewell Steering Committee co-chair, along with Vi Simpson, what did you guys tell about in your meeting and about the Hopewell neighborhood project? Boy, you drive through there every day and there's another layer of something down, and you can start seeing what a large piece of property this is, and lots of dump trucks going out of there with stuff in the back.
Yeah, we try to do this a couple times a year with a steering committee of residents and folks involved caring about it, and we had our steering committee meeting Friday. A bunch of updates will be, if it's not up already, the slide deck, the presentation will be up, but you know, it included things like the hospital is basically 50% deconstructed now, above ground. They still have 100% to do underground, and they'll get to that before the end of 2023, we hope. They should. We reported on our what we call Phase 1 East. That's the block that now looks pretty wide open between Rogers and Morton, and between First and Second, and kind of the infrastructure plans there, and you'll start to see construction next spring. As soon as the thaw hits, we've got we're out for bids now to do start building the greenway and the streets and the sidewalks and the infrastructure that'll let the development happen after that. We talked about the kind of the branding. We talked about the conversations about potential housing partners. There's a lot going on, kind of the area below First Street, also to the west, is now in the property. The city owns that, and we'll be looking for partners to be developing that. The kind of housing we're talking about, the interest in sustainability and in affordability and in really high quality design. So it was a good hour and a half, and a lot of feedback. One of the big feedbacks we got, so I'm glad you asked me about it, was people just don't know what's going on there.
Yeah, that's why I like to talk to you about that, and even Deputy Mayor Donald Griffin Jr. as well, because I think, and maybe it's just me and my simpleton mind, and probably is to a degree, but I think people think, well, the whole thing has to come down first before anything else is going to start, but all these pieces are moving concurrently, right?
Interestingly, you know, First and Second Street each were in line for major federally funded redos, upgrades, and refresh. So that's lining up as well. That was all done. We bought the property 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago now, and there's been a ton of design work, master planning. We now have done the physical engineering design for Phase 1 East, so that was a lot of work and a lot of money, and that's what's going to get built next year. We've done, you know, the core building update. You know, the plan is for that to turn into a affordable housing with an expansion on the west side of it, a new addition. So that's underway. There's about 50 different moving parts going, and we try to. I know it takes a long time, but we hope it can help just to remind people this is a chance for a new neighborhood in our downtown. And we're very excited about having up to 1,000 new units of housing that will be rentals, ownership, multifamily buildings, townhomes, different, you know, row house, different kinds of options. It's really exciting. It's going to be a multi-year process, and we're just trying to keep people informed about it.
And everybody sees if you drive by there, yeah, you can see more things as the buildings go down. And just to reinforce the historic part of the hospital, that's not going anywhere, is that right?
The oldest part, that core building, KOHR, at the corner of First and Rogers, is going to remain. Yep, and as is the garage. Those are the only two structures that will be remaining after we get through the demolition. And by the way, both us in the Phase 1 East and the hospital are doing a ton of deconstruction and recycling metals.
Oh, you can see the piles of rebar and yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, all that stuff. So we're trying to, that takes a little more time than just blowing it up or tearing it all down and trucking it away, but it's worth it. And again, the hospital is about 50% down. Our area is completely ready to move forward with, and we expect the rest of that by next year.
Mayor John Hamilton is our guest this afternoon. Every Tuesday he joins us, and we talk about all the things happening here in a very, very busy Bloomington. It is November. You have is the farmer's market still going on? Does that goes all the way to Thanksgiving, correct?
Till the Saturday after Thanksgiving is the holiday mart. Yep.
So we've got that to stay on the calendar as well. Jordan Davis, our buddy from the Chocolate Moose and the organizer of Food Truck Friday, since it's going to be so nice this Friday, there'll be an encore presentation of Food Truck Friday from 11 to 8 this week. So that's always exciting as well. The election, that's big news, obviously, coming up and moving along. We are 1 week from today, so early voting continues throughout the rest of the work week until 6 p.m. daily. Saturday, we'll add it again, 9 to 4. Only place you can go is 302 South Walnut Street. That is the election in-person voting place. Next Monday will be 8 to noon. Karen Wheeler was on yesterday, Mayor Hamilton. She said if you're on a tight budget time-wise, Monday is not your day because that's the last call and it's busy.
Yeah.
And then Election Day is 1 week from today, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., whereas early voting, you can only vote at 302 South Walnut in person. And on Election Day, you may only vote in your precinct. So there you go. We've got everyone covered. When is your next week is your meeting, you, meaning all of us, with the county commissioners and everything else, the day after Election Day. That's interesting in a couple ways and forms.
Yeah, we continue to talk. There's a lot of work going on behind the scenes on the convention center. We've been sharing some new information and approaches with our fellow electeds and talking about things. But there is a formal meeting that county commissioners have called to talk, which we will go to and talk about plans to move forward on the, I think at the noon or morning, I can't remember the exact time on the 9th, and I'll plan to be there. I'm hopeful. I know a lot of this is inside baseball. People just want to say, so are we building this thing or not? and I believe we will. And there's different ways to skin the cat, and I'm optimistic we have a good path forward that will include everybody at the table, but also make sure we can get it done efficiently and well. And we just released, yesterday, the arts study.
That was my next one on there for you. Yeah.
They kind of relate a little bit because the art study, I don't know, I can do the quick five recommendations. Number one, you don't need to build a brand new purpose-built arts facility. We have so many in the city, you're good. You don't need to build a brand new one.
And
quickly
for our listeners, who determined this? This is an outside consulting firm, correct?
Yeah, this is an architect and consulting group but they interviewed 100 people in the city and they did all kinds of focus groups and, you know, assess stuff. So it's their recommendation. It's not a Bible, but it's their recommendation. Number two, they did said the Waldron's great. If Constellation can keep using it and do stuff, just keep going. We had, you know, we had set that for at least 5 years, and they said, look, that's a great arts facility. Try to keep it going. Number three, they actually talked about the convention center, and they said, if you're going to do a convention center, you should really think about integrating the arts in that very well. Use that as the kind of the front porch to get into the art scene, into the community, and connect it well. So those are three things. And then there are two others that are a little more complicated. One was, even though you don't need a new facility, you really ought to do a new, better job of amping up your programming. You got a great stuff going on, but you could do it to a new level with K-12 and with neighborhoods. And don't build a new building, but expand your programming is the basic message. And then the final point was, yeah, you don't need a new performance facility, but you really ought to think about an arts incubator. Think about the mill for artists, where you can bring all kinds of people together in workspace, performance space, rehearsal space, living space even, and they recommended looking at that, including one at the Hopewell site. So the report's online. I just gave a really quick summary, but it came out of a community group last year that said you should get this report and this advice, and we got the five major recommendations, and we're going to be digesting those and talking to people about how to move forward.
Was there anything of those top five points that jumped out and you said, wow, either that we didn't think of that, or that's a great idea, or well, that doesn't make any sense?
Yes, you know, a couple of them were. I mean, I have to tell you, if a couple years ago, we wondered, should Bloomington have a purpose-built arts facility? Because if you think about it, the Waldron's not a purpose-built arts facility. It's converted. The Buskirk Chumley is not a purpose-built. It's converted. Most of what we have in the city orbit is kind of converted, and we wondered. But they said no. They said, if you look at the facilities that we have for performance, you're rich already. So that was interesting. Second, the incubator was not an idea that we had really – wasn't on my screen anyway, and I think that's really interesting. And these are a bunch of really smart people with talking to 100 people in town. So that was interesting. The programming of interest, the convention center is not a surprise that they would view that as a great entry point for the city. So a couple new, some not so surprising, but really good to have in one place, and it helps us chart a path forward. You know, we love the arts. It's like essential to our city, and this is a way to take it to the next level maybe.
I think that's interesting as well, because not everything has to be brand new, out of the box, built from scratch. The study has told you this, and you've already have those foundations, which is great. And I think that will help some who might be on the fence about this, because not everything has to be brand new and up to date on that. Interesting. The incubator part, yeah, you won't have any problem with that with all the stuff that goes on at the mill. It's just to be a different style of incubating. All right, great job as always, my friend. I appreciate your time. We'll get back. Election Day. Are you available on Election Day?
I think I can call in. Are you working Election Day?
Heck yeah. What's more democratic than working on Election Day? We got to make sure we remind people to get to the polls and know where to go and what time and all of that fun stuff. So, yeah, come back and join us next Tuesday, my friend. Thanks.
Everybody have a good week. Thanks a lot, Mike.